Up next, Clayton Morgeridge is going to be offering us a commentary on liberalism and its role in advancing or stifling progressive social change.
We've probably all had the experience of being asked by a pollster or on some survey form to locate ourselves on a political continuum from right to left. You can check the box for very conservative, somewhat conservative, moderate, somewhat liberal, or very liberal. Of course, if you're a socialist, you might decide at this point to just throw the survey away. Or you might decide to check very liberal. After all, socialists often make common cause with liberals against injustices like war, poverty, inequality, the prison system, police brutality, racism, and sexism. We find ourselves at many of the same rallies and meetings. Many socialists, including myself, were liberals once upon a time. So why is a socialist not just a liberal, or perhaps a very, very liberal? Well, in a recent blog post at Jacobin magazine, Robin Marie Averbeck tells of being at a rally in October 2010 called by John Stewart to demonstrate that deep down, contrary to what right-wing pundits like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh say, Americans are mostly in agreement on fundamental values, and that if we were to all just listen to each other, we would find the big divisions between right and left melting away. The liberal perspective is that the deeply divided America the right wing points to is an illusion. As Averbeck writes, for a liberal, this divided America, an America that contains people with radically different values and radically different ideas of what a just, moral society looks like, does not exist. If it seems otherwise, it is simply because, as one sign at the rally put it, we fail to use our inside voices. This conceit that fundamental divides creating discord in America are easily corrected by a cool head and an open mind is perhaps the most central ideological tenet of contemporary liberalism. It was at this point at the rally, Averbeck writes, that she realized she was not a liberal. For what the right understands better than liberals do is that there really are substantial and fundamental oppositions between Americans, oppositions that cannot be resolved by open dialogue among well-intentioned people. Let me bring this point into focus in a somewhat different way. Liberals and socialists do agree on many of the injustices and inequities that run rampant in social life. But liberals suppose that what we need to do to create a more just world is to publicize and condemn the moral outrages and to appeal to everyone's conscience to implement programs and regulations that will create a more perfect world. Liberals appeal to the conscience of everyone who has power to use that power for the common good, and they appeal to everyone else to demand that those in power do so. But what if the institutions, the corporations, nation-states, and armies that govern our lives get their power by the very fact of their exploitation and oppression of the rest of us? The most obvious case in point here is the exploitation of working people by capital. Capital, and thus the power of the capitalist, depends upon managing people's opportunities, activities, and desires. That is, maximizing their productivity at work, minimizing their resistance, and maximizing their desires to consume what capital produces. Governments of powerful nations maintain their power against rebellious populations by violence and threats of violence exercised by massive armies and weapons production, much of whose extent and strategies must be kept from the public by intimidation carried out by many layers of policing and varieties of state terror. And we just heard some details about that from Christian Williams talking with Bill Resnick. If something like this picture is accurate, then protests and demonstrations appealing to conscience and reason are not enough. And parenthetically, let me suggest that the long, awful list of terrible things the powerful have ordered done to masses of human beings, and the willingness of millions of ordinary people to carry out these crimes, should perhaps teach us that morality alone cannot change the world for the better. Liberals suppose that the evils of the world are the work of greedy and cruel people who must be made by our reasons and our passion to see the errors of their ways, or they must be voted out of office or forced out of office by a public that has been galvanized into political action by humane liberal ideals. But it is almost always impossible to change the minds of people in power to principles that would take away that power. And replacing the individuals who now run corporations and nations with individuals who agree with us is impossible, A, because those who now run things run the selection and election process, and B, because the power of whoever we might be able to elect would likewise be confined by the rules and institutions of this system. Now, there may be a little more wiggle room in reality than in the very deterministic framework I have just outlined, but not much. This is why we must learn to see past liberalism. We must join, form, and nurture political organizations that aim at transforming the capitalist and militarist system of power which now governs our lives. I'm Clayton Morgridge for the Old Mole Variety Hour.
Come sit down, your name is on the table. Between the graves and cradles, for the old and new. Wait your turn and smile for the papers. The senders and the shapers will have no way with you. And shake the hands of masters while outside insurrection. The South can't be mistaken, so pretend like you don't know them. Redemption. You finally learned your lesson that this is how we change. Not here nor there, no patriot or traitor. You've learned to sit for supper and you'll sleep in your cage. It's politics as normal, it's votes and views and morals, none of which mean nothing to the people kept in storage. Who wake up in the morning, the nights are in your hands. At least the smashers and the crashers know exactly where they. Poison earth needs weeding.